Those of us who were together at our last talk will remember that we were speaking as part of a series that had to do with the family. The starting point, of course, was on the day of the Hepapante, the presentation which gave us the theme, the mother about the mother, that is, the Most Holy Theotokos, and we spoke about the mother, about how much a person needs to know and how she herself needs to know her own calling, and that a mother cannot even be conceived of apart from the family. She is the pillar that holds the family up. That is why we went on to give three more talks, and tonight's talk is the fifth within roughly the same plan. The previous talk had to do with the responsibilities of parents toward their children, and tonight will be an extension of that same thought. If you were all with us, you will remember that we began examining the responsibility of parents even before holy matrimony, before conception, before birth, how parents, those who will one day become parents, ought to live, so that their influence upon their children may bear good fruit. Because the truth is that we have not addressed this matter as fully as we should, and when today we try to advise or correct our sons and daughters, our own children, they answer us and, as the saying goes, back us into a corner. Have you forgotten what you used to do? One lady wanted to advise her daughter, and she was reproaching her severely. And the girl said, "Mother, when you were running wild all over Faliro, did you forget all that? Now go and answer her. Go and give her advice. Let us not imagine that we can do whatever we please. Trample everything. Tear everything down. Leave nothing sacred or holy standing. And then afterwards ask that our children turn out holy." They are holy. And many times we even have the audacity to talk about those youthful exploits of ours, so that our children learn about them, so that they hear about them from us ourselves. I am not speaking of those other malicious people who go and poison our children's minds. Do you know what your father did when he was young? The same father who tells you all these things? Do you know what your mother did? Ask me, I know, for there are many such people. There are such well-meaning people who do this kind of damage, because it is true, most of us were talked into it without knowing what we were doing. And a person must take this seriously into account. If he ever thinks of becoming a father, what he is doing today he will find standing in front of him. And it will be a serious obstacle for him, because a man who has a dirty past simply cannot. And yet even this is double-edged, it has two sides. For someone ill-intentioned it becomes an obstacle, but for someone of good will it is beneficial. For the ill-intentioned person will say, "Why are you telling me not to smoke? You used to smoke, I found out. You used to drink, you were a womanizer, you chased after men, you were whatever else, for all I know." Then, in this case, or that you're some innocent dove. Go back to Genesis, to chapter 38, and read about Onan, who did the very same thing. He used his seed outside his wife, in fact, he threw it away, and for that God put him to death. There is no means, my dear ones, sadly none, that can help us avoid fulfilling the purpose for which we entered marriage, and still come away untouched before God, still come away innocent. As long as we do not set the matter right, we will have our reckoning. We will have an account to give one way or another. No one is going to slip past. Today many think they are slipping past, because unfortunately even our spiritual fathers do not stand firm on this point. They have not grasped it as they should, and people who systematically avoid having children take the tip, take the pleasure, but they do not bring children into being. They have a blessing from their spiritual fathers to receive Holy Communion once, twice, three times a year. They do not want more anyway, as if to say, "When did they ever commune more often and lose anything by it?" And he permits him to commune, and he permits her to commune. Perhaps I am being hard on this point, and absolute as one might say, but this is how the things of Christ stand. He did not spare the angels when they sinned. They became demons. Moses committed one sin, Moses, who beheld God, and he did not enter the promised land. God put an end to any further discussion. "You will be taken out of the way," he told him, "because you did not do what I commanded you. Now I do not know how." Adam and Eve, of course, touched a single tree that he had told them not to touch, on pain of death, and he drove them out. and he preferred to come himself and be crucified, and he did not forgive them. How then will he forgive us for this? The Father took the responsibility, but your conscience is convicting you as if the Father were able to take from you a responsibility that you yourself know you are carrying. Here that verse applies which says, if the blind lead the blind, both shall fall into the ditch. God will ask him for an account. But you too see within yourself what testifies against you. Even though you have a blessing, you would rather the subject never came up for discussion at all, because it testifies against you. Since grace brings a person peace, when you receive a right answer, a right guidance, you settle, you grow calm. So how is it that you're still being convicted? It means your matter is unsettled. See to it that you find a way to set it right. Many people, my dear ones, who have become parents, take their stand on turning out good children. Can you show me the measuring tape that will measure your child and say he is good, or that will measure your own responsibilities toward your child and say they were carried out rightly, and that you did what you were supposed to do? Who can tell you that you acted well, that you turned out good children? In the end, if the children do not enter heaven, then they were not good children. Unfortunately, we talk endlessly about good children. Yesterday, an elder came into the shop. I don't remember what he bought. I was talking with a lady who was telling me about some heartache she had over her children. May I listen? Go ahead and listen. And the elder is listening too, and now he comes out with his own story. He says, I have a son. There is nobody like him in the world. I say to him, don't talk like that. The devil hears it and casts an eye on him. But there really isn't, sir, he says to me. You don't know what this child is. But lately he has been bringing a woman home, a woman who has 4 children with no husband of her own. The boy is 25 and she is 45. And you don't know what we suffer from that good child, eh? The way he spoke about him. When I told him, don't keep saying it, or Satan will cast the evil eye on him, I meant what I said. I truly believed it. Do you have the measure by which you can tell me that your child is good? Because you consider him good. How do you know that he is good? They know how to say thank you, mercy, and sorry, pardon. The well-brought-up ones, good children. He doesn't go to church. He doesn't go to holy confession. He doesn't receive holy communion. The children are well-behaved. He blasphemes. How is he a good child? Well, he didn't turn into a good-for-nothing. He didn't end up on the street. He goes out, and there he is in the lecture hall, in the office. And at the very same time, all the same, he is far from God. Sadly, we don't have this in view, and we think we have fulfilled our calling. It is an enormous responsibility, my dear people. I don't want to shut anyone out of marriage, but what the Apostle Paul said back then comes to my mind. I would like, he says, for you to remain as I am, and yet he says, I am not putting a noose on you, I am not throwing a snare over you. So Paul had his reason for saying that, and the reason was responsibility, the responsibility parents carry toward their children. And I don't mean simply that you'll lose sleep, because the child has fallen ill tonight, and tomorrow it has a fever, and the day after that it comes down with the mumps. And that he has this and that. These things are secondary. Your own parents sat up over your head as well. The world did not come to an end because of them. The other matter, the serious one, is the matter of that child's soul, where it will go. I once said, while speaking, when Nectarios was younger, at one point, I said, if this soul is going to be lost, it would be better for Christ to take him now. Our prayer is that his soul may be saved. And that seemed a bold thing to say. Here is a man who had no child for so many years, whom God granted a child after 17 years, and now he says that the child should depart this life, but that is the reality. What do I want him for, to keep my name alive? Why should he keep my name for me? What do I need with my name being kept? Is God in danger? Has he no people, so that I have to be the one to produce a man of God? Why can't others produce a man of God? Didn't Adam bring forth the murderer as well? And didn't Adam also bring forth the good one? So what does that prove? It's a personal matter for each one of us. It is an enormous responsibility to think of getting married. Think it through so that you do not end up in hell because you may well marry. And you say, what am I to do, have children, tangle them up in all this? You will get involved. You will marry with God as your fellow worker, and you will have children. You too are a creator, a great title, a great honor. Parents who went down on their knees before the wedding, during it, and after it, who groaned in prayer and gave children to the church and to Christ. And when we say to the church, we do not mean only priests, bishops, and monks, but generally people who are bound to the church. Christian children who, when the bell rings, get up and do not curse the priest, and do not pick up the phone to threaten him. I'll pull your beard out hair by hair if that bell rings again and wakes up the darling boy who came home this morning out of somebody's arms. Do you understand? So as I say, the responsibility is enormous. If a man truly reflected on this, he would tremble at the danger. He would not go out yet. We see men who come home, wash up, bring their wages and hand them to the wife to manage the household, and then leave for the coffee house. Off to the stadium, off down to the racetrack, off out somewhere. Where are you going, sir? Where are you going? Don't you have children? And do children only need food? Have you no other obligations at all? If a man understood this, there would be no coffee shops. Not for adults, and not for children either. Just as there are no coffee houses under totalitarian regimes, there are no coffee houses there, nothing of the sort. But I do not want coffee houses to disappear by force. I want them to disappear naturally, because they have no regular customers. And if only the parent paid attention to this and understood his responsibility toward his child, he thinks he has done his part because he bought the boy shoes, because he handed money to his wife, and she did the shopping, and so there will be good food for the child, whatever suits their household, and so on and so on. Now he thinks he's the good father. He bought them a television too, so they can watch the children's programs, and then he starts taking them out on weekends and so on. And he tells himself, that's what it's all about. There's the tutoring school as well, there's the teacher who gives him private lessons, there's the mademoiselle who teaches him French, and that makes him the father. No, you have no idea what this man is really doing. I mean it, seriously. Just go on up there and let the great master, the boss above, judge you, and then we'll talk about it. Tell me, I gave this child to you as an angel. Why are you handing him back to me as a devil? Because he gives them to us as angels, and we give them back to him as devils. We ourselves, every one of us, some a little, some a great deal, by our position and by what we actually do, this is the work we accomplish. So the responsibility of a parent toward the child is not only material, it is above all spiritual, above all spiritual. The father and the mother ought to have a special room set aside, and their foreheads here in front ought to have a lump raised on them from all the kneeling, because of the responsibility they carry for the children they brought into the world. A child is not simply a piece of flesh, it is above all spirit. It is inexperienced and defenseless toward the world outside. It carries within it every inclination toward evil. It has curiosity, and it has all the demons around it, all around, all around, all around. And they strike at it. Some of them relatives from within the house, some of them neighbors and friends and schoolmates, and others from outside who have that child in their sights and keep working on it. You are the one called to respond to all of this, called to heal, called to answer, called to prevent it. You, the one with experience, you who are the umbrella over that child to shelter it. And yet this effort is not made. The mother, for example, smells the food. She grows suspicious. She puts it on her tongue. She tastes it before she gives it to the child. And this happens many times, because before it goes down past the mouth, it first passes through the check that Christ has placed there, the sense of smell here in the nose and the sense of taste on the tongue, and only then does it go down. And this is done where material things are concerned. Many children would have been poisoned, many would have died because they themselves did not know any better, if certain foods had not been caught in time by the nose and by the sense of taste. But this is not done on the spiritual side. The mother who will not let her child eat something that has gone sour lets that same child read what is corrupt. Do you understand? The mother who would never let her child go outside because the neighbor's child has the mumps or a dry cough, that same mother sends her child off to keep company with someone who has the mumps in his soul. But it is the son of Mr. So-and-so. You see, my child keeps company with the daughter of Mrs. So-and-so. Seriously now, what is that place, a convent school? What goes on in that house where your child goes and spends its time? The house you send it off to so you can have some peace of your own. What is in there? Is it Christ and the Most Holy Theotokos and his brethren, or is it regiments of demons? Because no good manners, not today's and not those of all the centuries, can make up for the corruption that takes place in the soul. The child should never move outside its mother's reach, nor outside its father's, and it should place no trust at all in what comes from outside. The child must be watched over until it has built up antibodies within itself, until it can give some answer of its own to the spiritual germs that are out there, and until it has learned from within the home to be sparing with its thoughts and to bring its questions back inside. And the questions must be resolved at home. And if the father or the mother is at a certain level of understanding, not the level the world demands today with all its strange questions, they are still obliged either to have their spiritual father or some other person who knows a couple of things more than they do about the moral side of these matters so that they can get the answers and pass them on. Of course, the child's own reasoning is not what will keep children close so that they listen to their parents. That much is true, and the child does not listen to the father. Does not listen to the mother because it listens more to those outside, the ones who make things easy for its weaknesses. And so this child now sees enemies in its own parents, because they say no to it, and not for its own good, of course, as the child sees it, while it sees the others as friends. Well, in that case, there is nothing you will manage to do on your own. That is why I said that a married couple has no time to go out, and neither does any Christian. There is simply no time for it. A Christian has no spare hours to spend going out to the places where people gather. A Christian has no spare time. Such things have no place in the Christian life. Even if Christ granted him a million more years to live in this world, it still would not be enough for him to build what he must build for his own soul. And he must have a little rug, and hide himself behind the door, and make his prostrations there and pray, because whatever you say to the child, the child will not listen to you. So turn instead and say it to God, who will listen to you. And as I told you the other day, God is the transformer, the one who can speak good things into the child's heart. And you will remember what I was telling you about that woman down in Faliro, whose prayers frustrated every plan and every scheme her children made, until one day the eldest came and said to her, "Mother, I am going to tell you something, but do not pray about it." He was afraid of her prayer. It kept undoing all his plans. And then there are those other cases, like the woman who went and complained to her spiritual father, the elder, weeping, saying, "My child is lost. Where did you lose him?" "He is lost because I do not want to speak to him about God." Stop talking to your child about God. "And you, father, are telling me to stop talking to my child about God?" That caught her attention. "Yes," he said, "stop." "Then what am I to do? What do you advise me to do?" "Speak to God about your child. Do not speak to your child about God. Speak to God about your child. Say 9 words to God and 1 to your child, or 100 words to God and none to your child. Because if you say 100 words to the child and not 1 to God, you get nothing with the child and nothing from God, and God allows us to suffer these humiliations so that we learn the children are not ours. We cannot educate them. We cannot protect them. And we cannot make them holy, which is what we were appointed to do without him. Because some people say, 'Mine?' No. How many children does so-and-so have? 5 of God's. 5 of God's. It is written in the 4th chapter of Genesis that Eve gave birth through God. But did Eve come together with God and give birth? She came together with Adam. But the law was God's law, that the woman should bear a child from the man. Who takes account of this, who reckons with it? Today I went somewhere to a post office. There is a woman I know there who has a little boy 3 or 4 years old. How is Damianos? How is he doing? Fine, fine, she says. He is a very good little boy, I said. I hope we are getting ready for a little brother or sister for him. No, she says, no, no. Why? Well, she says, that depends. Certain formalities are needed and certain arrangements. In other words, we will decide for ourselves how it is going to be done. I did not want to upset her, and I did not have the time to cut the ground out from under her. But if he stretches out his hand and takes the one you have, what then? And then he gives you no other, and then he gives you no other. You who arranged how you would do it and how you would manage it, he gives you no other. What then? You beat your head against the ground. There was a lawyer's wife. That is how she did her reckoning, without the innkeeper. We have it all arranged with Takis, she said. What have you arranged with Takis? We will have one child, we will educate it, we will set it up properly, and a second one. Well, let the one be enough. They had even bought the stroller. The lady went and bought the stroller and kept it there in the room. 22 years later, still nothing, not even a sign of one, and so the stroller stayed there. That is how God humbles and shames people who take no account of Him. So this is what I want to say. Let us not stop at our material responsibilities. I'm not telling you to leave your child hungry. I'm not telling you to leave it without clothes. If you can, let it have a second and a third suit. I'm not telling you to leave it without an education, but pay attention to the matter of the immortal soul. A human being is above all spirit. The flesh is only his shell. It is his cage, and inside that cage there ought to be a lark, a nightingale, a canary, not a crow. Many of us have our children in golden cages, but there is a crow inside. Because, as Paul says, whoever does not care for his own household, his wife, his children, and so on, is an unbeliever, and worse than an unbeliever. It is true that a human being is a person, and therefore he may listen or he may not listen. The divine John Chrysostom says this, "Man without a guide, some were saved and some were lost. With a bad guide, all were lost." So watch out, parent, in case you are the bad guide, because a child sees more than it hears. And an account will be asked of you when each one of us arrives in heaven. Let them arrive. One little boat after another, the church in the home. At the helm will be the father, the mother will be in the rigging, and the children will take the oars. And those sailing along with them, with spirit, with high hopes, like a palm branch along the way. And what did you do? Why did you come to me here? When someone falls off the ship he is traveling on, will the ship carry on with its voyage, or will it do everything it can to bring help, to assist him, to take him and pull him up, and to shout an SOS and so on? These things do happen, but have we ever cried out, SOS? What is the SOS of the head of a family? Which way should they turn? Who is it they should call out to? The one who stands beside them and never leaves them, to save us, to pull us up out of the water. Do you know who that is? Christ. Which mother and which father ever offered a sacrifice? Did they set a fast in the house? Why have we lost the child? Penthos, mourning for sin. And when we say we have lost him, even though he was not struck down in a car accident, he is a living corpse. He is dead, and he must struggle today. When a child has strayed so far from the church, has left home, does not receive Holy Communion, does not go to Holy Confession, does not fast, does not remain chaste until holy matrimony, or marries, and does not have children, and so on and so forth, we have someone who is living yet dead. A person cannot easily go around saying, "How are you? Is everything all right at home?" At home, everything is fine this morning. As I was coming back from the market, I passed by my brother's house and rang his intercom. I have lived in Athens for 30 years, and this was the first time I had ever rung his intercom. My sister-in-law answered. I said, "It's Demetrius. I was passing through your neighborhood and thought I would say good morning. How are you doing?" "Fine, fine, very well, fine. How is Sotiris, my brother?" "Sotiris is in bed." "Then what sort of fine is this when Sotiris is in bed? How easily we..." "Thank you, blessed one, ever virgin. Well, what fine news. I don't know what to make of that, I think to myself. Still, it was worth it. Ringing the bell and finding out he's doing fine, flat on his back in bed. That is who we are. Come on now, be serious, man, and look at what is really at stake here. A father's responsibility does not come after the fact. It comes beforehand. In one house. To my surprise, I learned one day that a whole family had packed up and left, and they went all the way up to Papago. Why? What happened? How was that going to serve them any better? He says the man was afraid for his son because the boy was about to take up with a divorced girl who lived in the room next door. Just think about that. How many have been lost in exactly this way, young men and young women? Because their parents did not look ahead and guard them as much as they could have. The man simply got up, whether he had the means or not, and left. And he wasn't even a man of faith or anything like that. Yet the sheer urgency of your own future tells you to guard it from this fire. I'm going to lose my child here in this neighborhood. When you go to buy a plot of land, you check whether it has water, whether it has a telephone line, whether it has electricity. You need all of that. But do you check whether there's a fire burning where you're about to go? Do you look at what kind of neighborhood you're going to land in? Do you look at who will be around you? Did you pray to Christ to give you a piece of land, to give you a room, to give you an apartment somewhere where you can settle, where you'll be able to keep your children safe, where the danger isn't right next door? Did you ask Christ how is it possible, then, that you took no precaution at all and went and landed in a devil of a neighborhood among atheists in the middle of communism, in the middle of sex? Did you ask Christ? Perhaps you say, I have made some money, tomorrow I will buy something bigger. Did you ask him whether you should leave the place he put you in to begin with? Because you cannot demand an accounting from Christ and help from Christ when you are doing your own thing. Well, who told you to move away from there? Did you ask me? Did you ask me? Just because you made a couple of pennies and the devil put wheels under you and moved you and you lost your family in the place you moved to and so on and so forth. There are many problems a person has to think through from the very start if he wants to be saved. Perhaps some people consider the things we are discussing here to be old school. They are not old school at all. The words of God are always the new school. These things have to do with what is temporary and what is eternal. And if a person is not careful to make the most of this present world, he will find himself sadly deceived in that other world. He will find himself like the mole, suddenly facing a situation he never expected at all. And this whole world, with all its theories, will stay behind here. The soul will depart and go straight across to the other side. And what David says will happen, face to face, eye to eye. And then we will see what each of us will do, and then we will see whether these words of ours were just idle fortune-telling talk. Are these mere words, or are they serious truths that truly have, I repeat, both immediate relevance and eternal authority? Another grave evil that is widespread and turns people into instruments of Satan is lying. It is lying, and children usually learn to lie at home. I have heard Satan defending himself and saying, "Does Satan ever tell the truth? Lies are our food." And yet many mothers teach their children to lie. I was greatly struck by something a brother told me. He is here with us this evening, which happened to him in a certain home. He visited this house and found a little boy there. He asked him, "How old are you?" The boy drew back and said nothing. He did not know what answer to give. From the conversation and from the context, it came out that the little boy did not know which age to give, the true one or the false one, whether to give his real years or the made-up ones, because his mother had taught him to tell lies on the bus so that she could save herself the price of a ticket. She had taught the child to lie. So the child had his real age and his false age, and now he did not know which one he was being asked for or what answer to give, and what else had happened. One day, a shrewd ticket inspector approached without the mother noticing and caught the little boy first before speaking to her. He gave the boy some chocolate, made him a few promises, and so on. "I want you to tell me your real age." And the little boy said, "If I get the chocolate, I'll tell you my real age." and so the inspector exposed that woman. When the child went home, she gave him a terrible beating because he had revealed his true age. Do you hear that? All this just to avoid paying for 1, 2, 5, or 10 tickets. How much could that possibly amount to? And what else that woman will be held accountable for up there? I do not even want to say. Let me put it in terms of this particular case, but one thing is certain, that gentleman gave a fine answer. So that is what you are teaching him, is it? As you have sown, so you will reap tomorrow. When he receives his first day's wages, he will bring you half of it, because he has learned to tell you, "That's all I earned, Mom." You are the one teaching your child to lie right there inside the home. So when you make that child an instrument of Satan, when you teach them the scheming and the deceit inside your own house, what do you expect them to be like out in the world? It should be the exact opposite. The child should be completely honest, willing to take the loss, willing to be the victim, and never the one who victimizes another. Because in society, there are always two kinds of people. The victims and those who victimize choose to be the victim and never become the one who wrongs another, even when you are in the right. So how is this child going to come out tomorrow as an upright citizen in society? How, when you shield it from nothing, when it comes to corruption, and it watches that corruption right there in the house, you have that idiot box sitting there, that demon box, that devil box, and today with the horns up on the rooftops, and that is what you're teaching your child there. You are selective, you say, and what about the hours when you're not at home? Do you think the child will not go and do something? You have to head it off in advance. Our grandfathers lived thousands of years without these things. What harm came to them? And how far have we advanced with this thing today? You'll say to me, is television a bad thing? In itself, it is neither good nor bad. The use makes it bad, and the use makes it good. If you have the strength to be selective, to watch certain things that you could never get to on your own, then it is good. But does it have that strength to be selective, to leave aside the things that you leave aside? And when the child sees you sitting there 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, why should it not sit 2 hours in front of it in its turn and let its schoolwork go? Do you know what empty tin cans we are turning out of the schools today? Or look at the children we've sent off to the private schools where they go easy on us and hand out the grades because it's the money that counts. And what we get back, in every sense of the word, is galvanized tin cans, hollow inside, with a nice shiny plate. What happens on the inside, the corrosion of the soul and all those images switching one after another, it is not a small thing to keep changing images like that and still be able to bear it. Someone was saying that a child, right up to 15 or 17, ought to be in bed by 8 o'clock so that it can get up at 6 or 7 in the morning and go to school or to work. It needs 8, 9, 10 hours of sleep. How is it that children who are like ones possessed sit up until 12, until 1 in the morning, and then come the nerves and everything else? Now, who did this to them? Did I do it? Did the angel do it? Did Christ do it? Did the Most Holy Theotokos do it? Who did it? We did it. So you will head these things off as far as you can, whatever lies in your power. I'm not telling you to pick up a pistol and start. It is nothing like that. What I want is to put a certain fear into this matter so that a person stays careful and keeps watch. What is it that can show the child the way? What is it that can strengthen the child, as far as possible, to be selective for itself? Because whatever comes on the screen, we are the ones who applaud it. The fly settles on filth. No, we are not flies. We are human beings who must be saved. And then there is you, picking up and reading every kind of corrupt printed thing. With nakedness in it, with this and that in it, and it comes into your house. Look how much poison walks into the house. And you are the grown-up who can handle it. Is that it? And you have need of these devilish things. Will the child not read it too? Will the child not look at it too? In this matter as well, you must head it off. You must be careful. When the room inside is thick with cigarette smoke and the rest of it. When the table inside is laid out with the cards and the rest of the company. What is to become of all that? Off to bed, little Katina. Little Katina will go to sleep tonight, but tomorrow she will not go to sleep. As far as it depends on you, little Katina and little Yanis will go to sleep, but tomorrow little Yanis will not sleep, and little Katina will not sleep, and you will not sleep either beyond the grave. What will you make of the child, a firewalker? I will do this and I will do that, and nothing will happen to you. How is the child to manage it? Is it a firewalker, to tread on the coals and come out unharmed? And yet some people, but that is another subject, the child has to learn this. A person must learn to pray, and he must pray first himself, so that the little one sees him. He must kneel down himself, not go and do your prostrations, metanois. No, let us do our prostrations, let us sit down together. The husband comes home tired, so he can't be the one to do it later on. The mother, someone, somebody has to do something. It is a burden, that's true, but somehow it has to be done. The child has to learn to pray as well. You don't teach him tall tales and made-up stories. Watch out for the old hag. Watch out for the bogeyman and so on. All that sort of thing is made up. Don't teach it to your children. The child will learn to pray from the prayers of the church. He will learn, "Have mercy on me, O God," Psalm 50 itself, the actual text. He will learn, "It is truly meet to call you blessed," the hymn to the Theotokos. He will learn the troparia of the saints. Leave the little dear granny and dear grandpa and daddy aside, let those come afterwards, and so on. It will be whatever God wants. Let their mouth be sanctified with the name of the most holy Theotokos, with the troparion of their patron saint. From the time they're little, you'll give them a couple of saints' lives to read. Before the devil gets the chance to build inside them, before the devil gets the chance to write on that paper inside them. And then we will erase all that and write the good things instead. I'll cut it out when he's older. I'll teach him when he's older. No, all of this you must do first. You, the mother, the father. God expects it from you. On Wednesday and Friday, you will make a distinction in what you eat. You will make that distinction. And if at all possible, you will not eat in front of the child, even if you have some need to. The child hasn't yet grasped that someone may be ill and has to eat. You will teach the child to fast. You will teach the child to go to church early in the morning. Not you go on ahead to church while you turn up at the very end. No, you will go to church together. The child must see that what you are asking is both possible and necessary. Show that you also do it yourself, in everything that passes through your hands. When you set this child on its feet from an early age, when you form and prepare this child from an early age, and it lives in that kind of warmth, in that kind of climate, it will still suffer some damage, but far less than a boy or girl who has no such foundation at all. I meet children from families who say to me, "I don't even know such a thing exists. We don't know there is such a thing as fasting. We don't know there is such a thing as self-control. What are these things you're telling us about? And yet these things are necessary." The goal isn't to raise a child who is educated. Raise a child who is full of grace. Let the grades be a little lower, so they don't get a 10. Let them get a 9. Let them get an 8, a 7, a 6, a 5. Let them even be held back and repeat the year in school. Should make a prostration, even half a prostration. One day that child will come back to the place it left. It will return because it has seeds inside it. But a child that is barren of such things, whose mother chased it down the street to get an egg into it and a beaten drink, who made a spectacle of everyone just to get it to Holy Communion, just to hand it something, do you expect that one ever to turn into a real child? It can't happen, and a certain hardness is needed, a good hardness, not malice. Not I'll take my anger out on him, I'm on edge and I'll tear his hair out. No. When the child is genuinely at fault, it must be punished if it will not listen to a word once, twice, three times, perhaps even more. Set gentle upbringing aside for a moment. Perhaps your hand will be sanctified. The rod came out of paradise, it is said, and he who spares his rod, Solomon says, does not love his own soul. You will give him a good hiding. You will let them have it. Because you don't love him? No, because you do love him. Lady Love has stepped into the kitchen. Now Maria has to be dealt with. Even so, when you strike the child, when you give it two slaps, when you punish it, you yourself suffer, you suffer inwardly. But that is what you must do, if you want to catch it in time, if you want to do something. And there are certain mothers or certain grandmothers who get in the middle. Do you know how many old grandmothers will end up in hell for meddling between husband and wife, for meddling with the grandchildren? And old men too, interfering with the upbringing the parents are giving? How many elderly grandmothers will end up in hell because they meddle in their children's marriages and interfere with how the parents are raising their grandchildren, and elderly grandfathers do the same, don't hit the child, and so on and so forth? Step aside, grandma, and stay out of it, because nobody is going to get you out of hell. You have no business meddling. Go and pray. Let the mother be the one who knows when they need a smack and when they don't. You understand, because otherwise this person can never become a real human being. One basic thing. There was a mother who had one child, and the ones that came after she threw in the bin, just one, and he had climbed so far up onto her head that he had utterly humiliated her. One day he says to her, "I want you to bring me a worm." Now where is the mother supposed to go and find a worm? "I want you to bring me a worm." And on top of that, they hit their mothers with a curse against the Panagia, against the All-Holy Virgin. They hurl those blasphemies at them, 10, 11 years old. So off she goes to bring him a worm. Out she goes into the garden, picks up a hoe, and starts digging to find a worm. And she finds the worm. She found the worm and brought it inside. "Cut it in half, half of it mine and half of it yours." She cut it in half, and her precious little boy did not say a word. She cut it in half, one half for her and one half for him. "Eat yours, eat the worm." So the lady ate the worm. And when she had eaten it, her darling boy said, "That was mine. Why did you eat it?" Do you understand? Perhaps what I'm telling you sounds funny. Perhaps even worse things are happening. Perhaps you yourselves know of worse cases. Is this how God gave him to you? No, he did not. He has him there to punish you, say a prayer, because he threw everything else in the trash. Put your own children there. How many are they? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And you'll see, he won't be making demands like that. He won't be making demands. We ourselves are the ones who make today's humanity what it is. And by extension, hell as well. My friends, the children of today are godless. Where did they become godless? And how did they become godless? Because they were not watched over by their parents as much as they should have been. Their parents sent them out to become human beings, and they became morally degraded. They sent them off for gold, and they lost Christ. The responsibilities are many. I could speak for months, I could speak for years. And if I drew on the fathers, and if I drew on the wise, and if I drew on the Old Testament, I would have to speak here for months on these subjects. I want to believe that in this brief way you took something with you, that you held on to something, that something will remain, so that we have some idea of what this thing called the family is, how the father ought to be, how the mother, how the children,